Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 174 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. I just misspoke there. 274, almost lost 100 episodes. Don't want to do that. Hello, it's Carl again from Self-Sufficient Hub, and today we're going to be talking about animals on the homestead and which animal might be right for you. But before I do, I've got a tiny bit of housekeeping, a little bit of an announcement to make. That is to say, as regular listeners will know, we are going to be moving home in the next little while. We're moving in the spring and we're going to be downsizing. As a result, I'm going to be giving away loads of the books and stuff that we have here. So this is a little announcement to say that starting next week, every Friday, I'll be doing a draw from all of our patrons, and we'll be sending out some of our homesteading books, some that I've got duplicates of, some that I've got spares of, and if you're a patron, you'll be eligible. I will draw from all the patrons that are currently subscribed every week, every Friday, and I'll be sending you out some of the amazing books from my library here. They include, the first one will be The Complete Guide to Self-Sufficiency, I think that's what it's called, by, or is it The New Complete Guide to Self-Sufficiency by John Seymour. So to be eligible for that draw, you just have to be a patron, and I will be, as I say, starting that a week today, next Friday. So that's something to look forward to. Right, on to today's episode. We're talking about animals and which animals are right for your homestead. Now, I'm sure most of you have chickens, but we're going to run the full gamut today of all the different animals that you might consider, or at least lots of them. Now, most of them I've got experience with, but not all. But even those that I don't, I've done a fair amount of research on. And we're going to have a nice long chat about all the different animals that you might think about having and keeping at home. The first couple of considerations kind of go across the board, really. And the first thing to say is that if you're going to have livestock, then you're going to have dead stock. Of course, that's something I've spoken about previously on the show, but it is definitely something to bear in mind, especially if you're going from zero animals to some animals. Now, this is no different to if you keep any other pets in your house, cats or dogs or whatever it might be. But, you know, if you're going to keep livestock, then you are going to keep dead stock. There aren't many animals that live as long as we do as humans. And, you know, you have to be prepared to deal with that. You have to be prepared to think about spending money on vet bills. Of course, you have to be able to feed your animals and water your animals. And that comes to the second consideration, you know. So the second consideration is really just about the time that you're at home. But before we move on to that, you know, just be aware that if you're going to get animals, you really should consider, are you going to be happy dealing with them insofar as maybe dispatching them or, you know, dealing with finding a dead chicken outside in the morning before you leave for work and having to deal with it, whatever it might be. So that's just something to consider. The next thing, obviously, is care. And every animal needs really daily attention in an ideal world. Now, there are some setups, and I'm going to be instigating a setup fairly soon with some of our chickens that we're probably going to be housing away from our home, where I might not need to check on them every single day. And to do that, you've got to be really, really focused, laser focused on making sure that all of their needs are met on that day that you're not going. So, you know, you need to have some kind of capacity for them to have fresh food and water that's going to last them more than a day, that's guaranteed not to get knocked over, guaranteed not to have vermin in there eating it all or drinking it all. And, you know, that is its whole separate consideration that maybe I will look at in more depth when we're doing that kind of thing ourselves. But for now, I think the safest thing to say is, you know, if you've got animals, then you really are tied to dealing with them and looking at them and checking on them at least once a day. So that has its own considerations for things like going on holiday, you know. So do you have someone who's going to look after your animals while you're away? These are all things to consider before you get your first animal. Now, Speaking of first animals, as I've already said, most of you, I imagine, have chickens, and chickens are a bit of a gateway animal. They're the animal that most people get into and get first before thinking about getting others. So chickens are just a great animal insofar as they're like pets. They're so friendly. They are really, really fun to watch and, you know, interact with. They are really tame for the most part, depending on the breed. And, you know, they are one of the easier animals to look after. They just need food and water every day and somewhere safe to sleep. That's pretty much it. Depending on where you live, you may have vermin considerations and pest considerations, you know, things like foxes or raccoons, depending on where you live, that may take an interest in your chickens as their dinner. And really, you know, they're probably one of the harder chickens, one of the harder animals, rather, to keep safe from those predators. So you definitely want to look at your predator control if you're going to get chickens. Now, when it comes to space, I think one of the reasons why chickens are one of the first animals for so many homesteaders is because they do require much less space than a lot of the bigger animals like sheep and goats and those kind of things. We can usually keep a couple of small chickens, you know, a couple of bantams in a fairly small run, and they'll be really quite happy in there. So, you know, when you're talking about chickens, you don't even need to go for a full-size chicken. You can go for bantams, and they're still going to deliver you gorgeous, delicious eggs. And one of the reasons I like chickens so much as a homestead animal is economically. They are one of the animals that with really no effort, little to no effort, they're going to actually pay for themselves. They're probably one of the most economically sound investments you can make, depending on the breed, to get yourself more out than you're going to get in economically. The feed costs certainly should be lower than the egg costs that they're producing for you. So chickens are definitely one of the first animals to consider. And once you're going to get chickens, then it's all about which breed. I've done podcasts on that actual topic. While we're in poultry, and again, I've done a podcast just on which poultry to choose, you know, you can also consider ducks. The requirements for ducks are fairly similar insofar as size, insofar as the space they need. They will make a little bit more mess. They have slightly different housing requirements. Depending on the breed, they're almost certainly going to want a pond that they can swim in or something of that nature. But ducks are definitely something you can consider. And when you're free ranging these animals, they have their own risks and benefits as well. Chickens all over your vegetable patch will probably not be a very good idea. Ducks judiciously used on your vegetable patch can be fantastic pest control. So these are all things to consider. Then we have geese. Now, geese, again, are a fantastic animal, I think, for the homestead. They, again, deliver eggs, and all of these poultry can deliver meat as well, if that's your inclination. Geese I like because they can basically trim a lawn. They can live predominantly on grass for most of the year. So they're another animal that has its own considerations. A bit bigger, want a bit of a bigger space to roam than chickens because they're a bigger animal. And again, they're going to want access to water so they can clean themselves more than just drinking water, just like ducks. But they're another option for you. And when it comes to protecting geese, they're going to be a bit hardier against some of the predators, but, you know, just due to their size, especially if you have them in number. But again, they are susceptible to foxes and the like. So definitely one to consider the pest ramifications on, or rather the predator ramifications of as well before you get. But that's all the birds. While we're in the, well, not all the birds, it's the most common birds. But while we're in the sort of small animal group, we should also mention a couple of others. And those are quail and rabbits. Quail and rabbits really fill a gap in the small space homesteading space, because they're animals you can keep in a much smaller space and breed for meat. The quail will obviously lay eggs as well. And again, these give you options if you want to have a range of animals on your property. You could probably keep some breeding rabbits and some quail in the same space you would need for just three or four hens, you know, regular sized chicken hens, not bantams. So well worth considering these as well. So that's all the small animals and poultry. And I've done episodes, I think, that cover all of those in a bit more detail. But these are, I think, considered the gateway animals, especially the chickens, because these are the animals people get first. And then they think, well, I can keep animals now. And then they start opening their eyes and their ideas and their thoughts to some of the larger animals that are available to you. And once you do that, then You've got all sorts of other options. You've got the idea of producing your own milk. You've got the idea of producing a vast range of meat beyond poultry and rabbit. And we're going to be talking about all of those options next. So you can start thinking about, am I ready for some bigger animals? And if so, which direction should I head? Hi guys, I'm just very quickly interrupting the show to say please consider supporting it. If you'd like to consider supporting this one-man operation, there's lots of ways you can do it. One of the easiest of which is just to talk about it, to share it online on your social media pages or with friends. By growing this audience is one of the best ways that we can actually ensure that the show is sustainable. If you'd like to support it more directly, then please consider becoming a patron. You can do so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. By becoming a patron, you help me to achieve things that I'd love to be able to do in the future, such as buying better equipment to increase the quality, allowing me to pay myself some time to spend on the podcast, again increasing the quality of it, and also paying for things like transcription and show notes. If you would like to do that, please do consider going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. Thank you. Everything you do to support this show is really appreciated. So one of the lessons that I've learnt from my last 2 or 3 years doing this kind of thing, or rather 3 or 4 years, is infrastructure is important, particularly with bigger animals. Now, if I get offered a few chickens and I don't have anywhere to put them, I'm going to have a hutch or two lying around or something I can temporarily house them in until I get a chance to build a run. The same isn't necessarily true if I get offered a cow or a pig. So one thing I've definitely learned is have the infrastructure in place before you bring your animals home. I have been very guilty of not doing this in the past, and it does cause extreme pressure and stress. So, you know, have all the infrastructure in place. And for the bigger animals, all the infrastructure I'm talking about is housing and fencing, really. Also a trough or somewhere you can feed and water your animals, because getting them home and not having these things can really, really make things difficult for you, I assure you. So let's start with goats. Goats are amazing animals. As you all know, I love my goats. They are fantastic milk producers. I would suggest that just 2 goats would provide a family with all the milk they could possibly need all year round if you stagger the breeding. And 1 goat will provide a family with all the milk it would need for 9 months of the year, or longer if you wanted to prolong the lactation. So 1 goat can make a huge difference, but of course they are herd animals and they're much, much happier with more than one of them. Now, goats, I think, they're a great animal. They're a great pet. They are one that a lot of people get put off because they hear nasty tales of people of them escaping. I've done an episode all on goats and how you can sort of avoid those problems, but you are definitely going to want some fencing, and some rather robust fencing if you're going to get a goat that's prone to getting out. We're very, very lucky. Our goats are all really well behaved. We have some really ropey fencing, as those of you who follow me on YouTube will already know. It really is in quite a state, the leaning fence of Pisa. But they are quite happy in their paddocks, so we're really lucky there. But fencing is definitely something you're going to want to consider, and you're going to want it to be at least 4 foot high. Depending on the breed of your goat, you may want it to be higher. Now, a goat's going to want a fair amount of space compared to all the other things that we've talked about, but you could also get pygmy goats. You can get Nigerian dwarf goats, which are fantastic milkers, and they're much smaller. They're going to be happy on a much smaller piece of space. And I'm talking, you know, you could easily house a couple of Nigerian goats on well under 1/4 acre. I'm not really sure on sizes here, but do some research online. If you're looking at goats and you're not sure if you can keep them, I'm sure you can keep Nigerian dwarfs in a fairly small space quite happily. I'm not talking about confining the animal to a really restrictive space, but even, you know, meeting their requirements and keeping them really happy, Nigerian dwarf goats for milk might not be off the table for you. Of course, there's also sheep. Now, sheep are notorious amongst sheep farmers, or anyone else will tell you, they're designed to do 2 things, and that is to perish or escape. So again, you're going to want some fencing. And, you know, sheep, they provide us with 2 things as well, and that is meat and wool. They also make fantastic lawn mowers. However, I would suggest that if you're going to be collecting sheep for wool to use yourself, just be aware that what goes into it is a little bit more involved than just shearing the sheep and then knitting a jumper. There's a few steps in between that are quite labour intensive when it comes to spinning the yarn and brushing the yarn and that kind of thing. It's something we have done here, but it's really, really labour intensive. So just something to consider. What else? Next up, I suppose one of the other big animals that we have spoken about regularly is pigs. Now, I absolutely love pigs. They're super, super easy to keep. All you need to do is keep them well fed and they're really happy. Give them somewhere dry to sleep, plenty of food, and they're really, really happy. And in the past, we've kept pigs here and we've fed them for basically a cost of zero. Again, you can go back and check out my pig episodes if you want to learn a little bit more about that. The one thing I would say about pigs, and this is something I've learned and that I would do in the future that I haven't done before, is in future, I would only ever use electric fencing, I think, for pigs, because it's so reliable. The pigs are such a smart animal. They learn where that electric fencing is really, really quickly, and they don't test it after that. We had the first pigs that we had here. We actually took on the pigs that were owned by our landlord and looked after them here in our wood. And they would only use half the wood, and we could not figure it out why. There was this invisible line in the wood that they would not cross. Anyway, we discovered an old electric fence cable lying in the ground. It had just been buried by leaves and earth over time. And we pulled it up out the ground and it demarked the line over which they would not cross. They remembered, even though they hadn't lived here for about 2 years, they remembered where that electric fencing was for 2 years and they would not cross that line. That is how effective I think electric fencing can be for pigs. So, yeah, like I say, incredibly smart animal. They produce a ridiculously high amount of meat. They're probably they're probably the highest yielding animal insofar as food to meat, or certainly as far as big animals. You'll hear that rabbits, I think, might actually be the highest yielding animal insofar as meat to food ratio, and certainly meat to time ratio. I imagine they're comparable. But pigs, insofar as return on your investment, when you're putting your investment in as both time and food costs, I think pigs, your return on the investment is going to be really, really high. And if you breed your own pigs as well, they breed really, really successfully, really easily, and they have litters in excess of 10. So you're going to be able to sell some of those litter and then also keep enough pigs for you and your family, and you're going to be able to easily pay for your pig rearing operation that way if you're judicious about how you source their food. So pigs are definitely one to consider. Next up is cows. Now, cows are one of the more common farm animals that we all know about that perhaps most people don't consider. And I think for me, the reason we never considered it, cows, generally speaking, one cow is going to want the same space as about four goats. So, you know, in terms of the size of space that they need, or something else to consider actually with goats and cows is feed requirements. They're going to want hay through the winter. So, you know, if you're not able to, or if you're trying to be self-sufficient with your grass and your hay, then you're going to want basically double the amount you think you do, because the ground that they're on eating in the summer, you're going to want the same amount of ground with grass growing that you can cut and make into hay for the winter time. So it's just something to consider. But of course, you can buy in feed, you can buy in hay. Of course you can. So the only consideration that's like a necessary prerequisite is actually the amount of space they are happy to live on. But if you wanted to be self-sufficient in your feed, then you're probably going to want to double that, I would think. Now, of course, cows produce much more milk than goats. So you're only going to want one cow milking, I would think, at a time, and you're still going to have a huge surplus. So dealing with that excess milk is something to plan for. Now, we've recently come into the idea of Dexter cows. Dexters are basically a miniature cow, and I am desperate to have a Dexter cow at some point in the future. Really, really keen to do that and run that experiment. And I would like two or three so we can breed them. And basically what I would like is to keep a breeding pair, the female that we would milk, and then the offspring. They basically want 18 months to mature. So you're going to have, at times, four cows. You're going to have the two parent cows, you're going to have last year's calf that will be butchered this year, and then you're going to have this year's calf that will be butchered next year. So, you know, you need space for all four of them if you want to run a program like that. And you could do that on just over an acre, I've been led to believe. So that's our plan in the future at some point. And when it comes to it, you know, I think I'm not sure if I'm up to the task personally of butchering a cow yet, but if I were, it would be a Dexter for sure, but we shall see. But, you know, when it comes to all these things, those are all the elements that you're going to want to consider. Of course, you know, are you going to want to do all the butchering yourself? If so, a chicken and a rabbit are going to be much easier to deal with than a sheep or a pig, and they're going to be easier to deal with again than a cow. But these are all just considerations to go into if you're going to be using them for meat. Now, lastly, you do have all sorts of oddball animals. Now, my brother-in-law, he keeps some exotic animals that he breeds to sell the offspring of. He's got some, I want to call them parakeets, but I might be wrong, that he used just to breed, you know, just to sell. I don't consider them to be a homestead animal, really, because they don't offer up anything for the homestead, but they can offer a slight income if, you know, if you wanted to just breed animals to produce a small income for your homestead, then you could do that. He also breeds skunks, I believe, and a few other things. So, you know, there's all sorts of other options, but then we can also think about slightly less unusual things. Rheas, which are very similar to ostrich. They're a fairly common animal here in the UK now in homestead breeding. So again, they produce eggs, meat and offspring, which you can sell. And I think really you're only limited by your imagination. And hopefully that's given you, you know, sort of a rough idea of where each animal sits in the strata of space and effort and my ideas on what you put in and what you get out. But hopefully it'll give you a background to start thinking about what animals you might want to introduce to your homestead in the future. And all of these animals serve a purpose, whether it's producing food for us or whether it's just doing a job that we might otherwise have to do. You know, in the past, people have used things like pigs to do the ploughing. You know, you would have your crops and then you would harvest the crops and you'd put your pigs on the land and they would turn it over for you before you planted next year's crops. You can use goats to clear ground if you've got vast swathes of brambles and things like that all over your property. Then goats are a great grazer to come in and take care of that issue. So hopefully that's given you some background. I hope you've enjoyed it and I will speak to you all next week. Cheers.
This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.